Welcome to another edition of Should Have Listened to My Mother. I'm Jackie Tantillo, your host. Lucky enough to have a good friend of mine joining me today for this episode. Maggie McCaffrey has been
Hi.
Maggie and I have known each other a very long time. And I pretty much say this on all my podcasts. And Maggie is one of six kids, and I'm one of seven kids. So, of course, here we go again. Another story of Jackie and all of her friends that have siblings, you know, that match each other's siblings. And we're all very, very close. And Maggie is a licensed professional counselor. She lives in Connecticut. And she has a lot to tell us today, because I think a lot of her past has helped her become the shining light that she is today. And I mean that in the best way. It's not that she wasn't a shining light when we were growing up, because all we did is laugh and smile.
I appreciate you saying that.
But I think a lot of what has happened in your life has made you able to be a great healer and a help to the people that you work with today. So welcome, Maggie McCaffrey.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So as a licensed professional counselor, you help people who are in trouble, that have needs that they aren't able to solve or figure out on their own.
Yeah, I see individuals, sometimes couples, sometimes kids with anxiety, depression, and other mental disorders. And sometimes it's just for support because of transitions that people are going through. So there's like sometimes there's a period of time where they can't, and then I try to be that supportive one to help them to figure out the how to give it to themselves again or get strong again.
What kind of techniques do you use? Do you incorporate in your therapy?
Well, I think I focus a lot on, you know, what you kind of consider as coping skills, anxiety reducing kinds of techniques, and there are just so many of them. I also do some trauma treatment, and I'm trained in EMDR, which is a wonderful trauma treatment, but it's also now a full-blown therapy, and I use that whenever I can.
Just so we can explain, the EMDR is the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing?
Yes, yep.
So is that something that would be used with PTSD?
Yes, yes, absolutely, but it's also used for depression and anxiety as well. So it used to be just more, you know, it's developed for as a trauma treatment, but now it's used for a whole array of disorders, but also just, you know, dysregulation.
Okay, so you work with children and families, couples.
Yes. Yeah, teaching them strategies to cope with life stressors and to slow down and to be more present, to be more in the moment. So I feel like I draw from all kinds of, even Buddhism, or if someone comes into me with faith, we draw on their faith as a strength, like just everything you can think of that we can build from. Any point of strength we can build from, that's what we do. Someone might think they don't have very much, but then we find out that they have a strong faith and they're just not drawing from it. You know, teach them ways to be in the moment. And they real, you know, maybe they already know how to do that. Maybe think of it as enough. And so coming, you know, I work from a point of strength wherever we can find one. So, you know, if you're going to ask me, is that a book? You know, you're going to hear that if you go to graduate school. But I also, you know, I think it's great. I use that for sure.
It's interesting.
I didn't make it up.
Well, I wish you had. But it's interesting because so many people that I talk to, faith is a pretty important part of their life and what gets them through the day-to-day obstacles,
yeah,
struggles.
But it's not seen as a strength as much as it should be, you know?
Yeah, some people don't believe, which is hard for me to believe that they don't believe in something above them, something bigger than them. But it's a free world, right?
Right, absolutely. But they might be really good at, you know, being in the moment. And then from wherever their strength is, you're going to work.
So what made you go on this path?
I think that, so I was a teacher first. And I had to get my master's. I knew I had to go back to get my graduate degree in something. So it was either going to be teaching or counseling. And I think in the past, before I considered counseling, maybe I was scared of it a little bit because I thought it would be too scary to deal with problems. And then when I had, when I lost my husband about 16 years ago, I think that was the turning point where I came to the realization that I was in a more of a position to help people than I thought, and I really wanted to do that. I didn't know if it was going to be with grief work. It's not really where I want to work, but I think it just kind of inspired me.
So you were able to, once you made it through that really rough period, then you were able to see, I hate to be corny here, but you kind of saw a light. You turned that corner.
Yeah, I really do think that. It really gave me that push. Like, why should I be afraid of this? I can maybe contribute something now because of the grief even.
Peter, your husband, tell us a little bit about him. He was a wonderful man, a good friend of ours as well. He loved to dance.
Yes, he was full of life, and he was just a really big personality, and it was a very difficult loss for my whole family. So, you know, and we met when we were kids, so it was complicated, because then I had three kids, and the youngest was 9, and, you know, I had to figure stuff out. So, yeah, it was rough.
It's really rough.
It was definitely rough, that's for sure. Just, you know, I am from a big family, like you mentioned, and I had all their support and friends, and I feel like they really held me up during the worst of it.
It's pretty important, isn't it? Family and friends.
Huge. Huge.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Peter gave you a gift, right? I remember talking to you shortly after this happened, and everything was so overwhelming, like you couldn't even breathe.
Oh, terribly, terribly overwhelming. Yeah, I definitely didn't, you know, he was just such a doer, and it was just easier for me to let him do, and, you know, that's just what we did, but it didn't leave me in a good position of feeling like I could handle things. So I did have to learn two bills, obviously, and I had to learn to be independent, and, you know, I had some experience working, but I wasn't in the workforce at that time. So, I actually was teaching a little bit, and I left it to take care of him.
Mm.
Yeah, he was a firefighter in Yonkers, and he loved it. Yeah.
Three boys and three girls in the family. And tell us your mom's name. I know it already, but I want everybody else to hear.
Yeah, so her name, I was named after her. So my full name is Marjorie. She was a wonderful influence on my life for every little bit. Just very easy and warm, easygoing, and just always there. She was just always around. And that was so important, I think, growing up, that we knew someone was always there.
It really makes a difference. Marjorie had a sister, Claire, right?
Yes.
Was your aunt. So the two of the, because we used to summer together, Maggie and I, growing up on the beach and sailing and eating a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But Marjorie, Maggie's mother, and her sister, Claire, two darlings, and they would always sing songs, and they always had their beautiful pink lipstick on, and they would like sing Bicycle Built for Two, and they were always laughing and darn right giddy, you know, like childlike. So it kind of made our summers that much more magical to have that presence, you know, whenever you went to the Melly house.
Yeah, there was a joy there. There was a joy of life, and that we're going to help each other, and no one's alone. Like, never that feeling of you're there and I'm here. It was always, you know, so my aunt didn't have her own family, and she was just come and help and just clean and be a part of it and take care of the kids and give them their bath. But she just helped with everything.
How great is that? Not only your mom, but you had your aunt as well. What a pair those two were.
Yeah, that was like something, you know, that was just, what I got to see, you know, and witness. People just, you know, stepping in what you have, I want to be a part of, and I'll help where you need it, and we complement each other, and I got to, yeah, definitely be a witness to that. I feel like with my mom and the way she had friendships, that she loved her girlfriends, and that she had them, and she could lean on them and talk to them, you know, so she modeled for me how to be in relationships and how to count on each other and depend on each other in a way that I feel like, you know, is huge. That was her gift to me.
Among many, right?
Yeah.
Now, how old were you when she passed?
Yeah, I was 20.
When she was sick?
Yeah, she had breast cancer, and that was during the time where, you know, the treatments weren't as good as they are now. So she did suffer with that, had a mastectomy and treatments. So she got diagnosed when she was 55 years old and died when she was 60. So that's when I was 20 years old. So that was, yeah, that was a huge shift for my family, losing her and that anchor, you know. But
I know. I don't know, but I know. And then your dad had to go at it alone because he lived to a wonderful age.
92, yeah. He did. He loved helping us, and we moved in, you know, my whole family moved in with him for 3 or 4 years so we could save money to buy a house, and he loved that because we would cook together and be together and help each other and one hand wash the other, and I stayed home a little bit in there when the kids were little, and, you know, that could be lonely, and he was lonely, so we had some benefits
of
the extended family feeling, yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about your mom. What were some of your favorite memories that you have of her? Did you guys used to cook together?
She just, you know, always encouraged me with getting out there and doing physical activity. I like to play tennis, and she always encouraged me, and swimming and sailing and all the things. Like, she would sign me up, and again, with encouraging friends in my life. You know, just, again, like the being around thing. I think maybe that was one of my favorite things, that she would always be interested and know who my friends were and ask about them and love them. They felt like they had a connection to her. That was very special. So my house was very much one of the houses that people wanted to come to and were welcome in. You know, so just like being together.
That's really great when everyone wants to congregate at your house, right? It makes it so much more fun. We'd have parties and everybody would be in the kitchen with my parents.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like she was very accepting of others and, like I said, joyful and, like, with the singing of songs and things, laughing. So, pretty the simple things, I would say. The very simple things of life, like taking a walk together, supporting each other.
Was she a cook?
I don't know if she loved to cook. She just was, she had her rotation of things and made sure that she had her routine. Like, she was one of these people that, like, cleaned on Thursday and cooked, and 4 o'clock she started peeling the potatoes. Like, she was just, like, always doing something.
She was very present.
Yeah, and she was, you know, she was active in our parish. So she was in, a rosary group, and she was prayerful, and she volunteered at the hospital. And those were the things that I got to see. Did a lot of fun things with her, you know, the parish community.
Did she ever work?
She was a secretary, and then she stayed home, so she did not after that. After she had children, she just stayed with the 6 kids. She was all very, you know, wanted us to get a college education and always very supportive of all of our ideas.
Was she able to figure out, like, kind of dial into each of your different personalities?
Absolutely, yeah, I think so. I mean, we always had, you know, she always told us little favorite stories of this one or that one, or which baby was fun, and how all the nurses would love Joe because he was always make everybody laugh. And she was just good about keeping the memories of the things she liked about us alive.
The positive things and encouraging you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was, maybe I'm going to say it was easier for me as the youngest. So I'm going to say that. So maybe my sister, who's 10 years older than me, I think she had a little bit of a different experience with my mom. So my sister wanted to, at a very young age, like, go to London and study. And my mom was just nervous about that. So by the time they got to me, both of my parents were a little more easygoing.
Relaxed.
And open to relax. And so, you know, I would say my older sister's independence was very, you know, like, almost dramatic and seemed extreme to my mother, I think.
Yes, I totally understand. As the youngest, by the time I came around, all I did was keep my mouth shut and listen. And if anyone ever said, hey, you want to come with? I'm like, sure. Anywhere,
yeah,
anyone taking me, I'll go.
So I think in some ways, you know, between that and I think that I have a similar personality to my mom, like the easygoing and you know, not that I'm not independent, but I think I enjoyed the support of being around the family. I didn't feel like a need to go far away too early. So I think it was easier for my mom. You know, like back in 1970, my sister, you know, studying in London, not everybody did that. Couldn't understand it, you know? She was like, why do you want to do that? Like, she felt, I think she took it like, why would you want to leave?
Did she get to go?
Yeah, she did. She did.
Is that Pat or Claire?
It wasn't easy, Pat. She did, but it wasn't easy because my mom wasn't happy with it. So she was like, well, you're going to have to make that happen. So my sister said, all right. She did.
She taught another good lesson.
Yeah, so they restarted the relationship even though, all right, I'm going to do it. I'll save my money and I'll go.
Right. So, and the fact that your mom said, no, figure it out on your own, was actually a wonderful opportunity for your sister, because then it made her accomplish what her dream was, right?
Yeah. It wasn't, you know, maybe she initially thought that would stop her, but it didn't.
It backfired.
Yeah, like you say, it was like, there wasn't really, nothing was going to deter her, like, and that's the kind of attitude she had, and yeah. Before her time, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely see, and I have known of all these similarities between you and your mom and your personality. And I can see how we've both been lucky with our strong family roots and values and giving us the deep-rooted sentiment and family connections and faith. I can see, and I admire so much, how you made that decision between going from thinking of being a teacher, which is one of the most admirable professions in the world.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah.
That you now are helping people that are having difficulty with emotional problems.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've hit on it. Yeah. I've hit on my calling, so to speak.
It's pretty great because you didn't decide this till a little bit later on in your life.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. I guess, yeah. So I'm 58, so I guess I was early 44 when I made the full decision. Definitely a second career and later in life and all that good stuff. But yeah, you know, you go back to school later and it's like, instead of being like hard and scary, it was just like exciting. And I loved going back.
I think it worked out really well because you're more mature and you're wiser.
Yeah. I mean, I would feel for the kids that were like 26 in the class. I'd be like, oh, I wouldn't want to be doing it that age. So it did work out well.
That worked out well. Tell us briefly a little bit about your husband, Bruce, current husband,
sure.
Bruce, please.
So he's a widower, and a mutual friend pretty much set us up, and he has two children of his own, and he lost his wife when his girls were 5 and 7 years old. So, you know, we had the common experience of losing our partner and the parent of our children and how intense that was. And he lived in my town and we just started getting together and laughing and just really had a nice friendship developing. So yeah, we combined forces and our kids were older by the time we did get married. So there wasn't necessarily a whole lot of blending on their part going on. But that being said, you know, they're fine with it, and, you know, the kids with the union, and, you know, they understand that it's for us, you know?
It's for you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
When you get together for a holiday, do all the kids get together, or do they come to one house, or not so much?
Not so much. You know, he is Jewish, so he celebrates different things, so sometimes we'll have a big dinner for one occasion or another. We've done that all together. Thanksgiving together, a Seder. But more often than not now, this past Thanksgiving, his mom is in a nursing home, so he really wanted to just hang out with his mom and his older daughter at the nursing home visiting his mom on Thanksgiving. And so I spent it with my older daughter and some family members. So yeah, so like we don't have maybe a scene of gathering everybody all the time. And that really worked for us. The non-traditional really worked for us.
You guys have had so much going on, and Peter, your oldest is a firefighter as well.
Yeah.
Do they all remember their dad?
Oh, yes, they do. You know, of course, well, Peter was 17 when he died, so he very much remembers. So does Grace. Annie has less of the memory of her dad, but she does have memories. She wishes she had more, but she was only 9 when he died. But, yeah, you know, we get together on the date of his passing every year, and we sit and have dinner together on that date, and it's not sad, it's joyful. We just want to be together.
That's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah, you know, well, people could look at it different ways, but, you know, you got to figure out what works for you and your family to keep that close and keep that memory always close.
Right. You have to go on with your life, too. Not in a bad way, go on, but you have to absolutely have a party. Should anything happen to
me,
you have to live.
Absolutely. I mean, I know that what my husband and my late husband's wishes were, life is for the living. I mean, he actually said that. So I had no issues with it. But other, you know, my kids did initially.
Oh, it's horrible.
It was hard. It was hard to, you know, blend or not blend families.
So, well, I thank you for joining me and telling us about Marjorie, because she was
it's my pleasure.
Her beautiful blue eyes, amazing woman, your mom. So lucky to have had her in my life.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Yeah, it's been, she was a gem and a treasure. Thank you for asking about it. It's wonderful to talk about it and remember.
And keep doing what you're doing and helping others. That's really important. Maggie Melly McCaffrey, licensed professional counselor, joins us from Fairfield, Connecticut. She's walking her first dog ever, 3.5-year-old golden retriever, Melly. Maggie and her husband, Bruce, agree that Melly is the best therapeutic friend ever. Thanks for joining me on this episode of Should Have Listened to My Mother. I'm Jackie Tantillo.